Fall cleanup projects around the house can be a lot of work, with leaves to rake, gutters to clean, and wood to stack. But donating that old vehicle you no longer use to NHPR is as easy as pumpkin pie. Free up some space in your garage this autumn, all while supporting the public radio programs you rely on. We'll take care of the paperwork and even arrange to tow away your old car, truck, or boat for free. Learn more today at nhpr.org/cardonation.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire teachers have faced huge challenges this fall, trying to educate students in the midst of a pandemic. Some strategies have gone well, others have not. And now, as coronavirus cases increase across the state, school districts are wrestling yet again with new choices that will affect teachers, students, families, and the workforce. Today in The Exchange, the second in a two-part series on COVID and the classroom, we check back with New Hampshire teachers. And if you're an educator, tell us what you have learned these past few months and what your hopes are going forward. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests. They are Elizabeth Darlington, learning specialist at Richmond Middle School in Hanover, which has students from New Hampshire and Vermont. Also, Lindsay Cole, biology teacher at Kennett High School in North Conway. Abe Ewing, woodworking and manufacturing teacher at Conval Regional High School in Peterborough and a member of the New England Association of Woodworking Teachers. And Maxine Mosley, guidance counselor at Henry McLaughlin Middle School in Manchester and vice president of the Manchester Education Association. Well, a big welcome back to all of you. Thank you for your time. And I want to start off by asking all of you in just a few words, please, maybe two, three, four words. How are you feeling about this school year so far? And Lindsay, I'm going to start with you first.
Good morning. Surprisingly awesome, but immensely challenging all at the same time.
Wow. Awesome, but challenging. Abe, same question for you, please.
Good morning. I'm finding the school year tough and ever-changing.
Wow. Okay. Maxine, go ahead.
Good morning. I would say overwhelmed, exhausted, and the stress never seems to lessen.
Wow. And Elizabeth, to you.
I would say anxious, exhausting, and joyful to be back in the building.
Well, I can't wait to dive into some of the details on this. And I want to remind our listeners, send us an email, especially if you're a teacher, exchange@nhpr.org or call 1-800-892-6477. So Abe, starting out with you, your district Conval has adopted a hybrid model. And we talked about this the last time you were on. Cohorts of kids coming in on different days. What has surprised you most, Abe, about this whole process?
So we have kids for a week, then they're a week at home, and we're doing synchronous learning. So between the two cohorts, we're teaching them at home and in person at the same time. The most surprising thing for me has been when kids are in person, they're coming to class really ready to work and learn, like kind of surprising in a way. They're starting to value their time in person as much as I do.
So that's been the surprising thing, Abe, that, you know, instead of being like, oh, here I am in school again, when kids are in school, they're excited to be there.
Absolutely. And it's been really cool to see, you know, kids that were maybe tough to get engaged. Now when they're in person, their class sizes are smaller and they go for it, which is awesome.
And you're saying you do synchronous learning, Abe. So when kids are remote, they're still, you know, if your class starts at 9, they're logging in at 9 and they're supposed to be there.
Yes. So I have I start a Zoom call as I start class. I take roll call all together. For me, it's a little bit tougher because the hands-on portion of the wood shop is extremely hard to do online, obviously.
Sure.
So I have my kids working on some CAD, computer-aided drafting at home, and then we do check-ins throughout the class. So they're drawing and designing what my kids in class are building and vice versa on the next week.
So Maxine, you're vice president of the Manchester Education Association. As I said, what are you hearing from your colleagues about how they're doing?
It's a very mixed bag. I think some people are expressing that they're incredibly overwhelmed. Manchester does not have the level of technology that perhaps some smaller districts have. As everybody knows, everything is on back order as far as technology across the country, and everybody's competing to get it. So our folks are attempting to do synchronous learning. We have a hybrid model, we have fully remote model, we have lots of configurations, and it's a struggle. And what I'm hearing from my folks is they are tired. They are happy to see the kids in person or online when they can get them, but it's a tremendous amount of work. It's different than what they were trained to do.
Yeah, for sure. And you're also a guidance counselor, Maxine. So how would you say the students are doing, you know, better than expected, worse than expected, unexpected challenges or triumphs? Yeah,
I would say there are too many children not accessing their education for a lot of different barrier reasons, whether it's internet access or having a computer, or there's no adult in the home, or kids are not where they normally would be because they've been stuck somewhere because they can't get home. So they're trying to learn from out of Manchester, even out of state. So what we've seen is a tremendous increase in the barriers to learning with a lot of our kids.
Wow. And I heard, Maxine, in a story that NHPR reported from Nashua, you know, some concern among teachers in Nashua that kids are just, you know, shutting down the video and the audio. So they're sort of on the, you know, the Google Classroom or Zoom or whatever they might be using, but they're not really there. They're kind of logging in and then going off and doing something else. Do you see that in Manchester?
I see that. I can speak for my school specifically dramatically. One of my jobs is to reach out to parents.
Yeah.
And in most cases, parents will tell us that their kids are online and they're doing their work because their kids are telling them that. But we have hard data showing that they're not signing on, or they're not responding, or they're turning in blank work. And it's hard to reach these kids. Their folks are working and it's very, very difficult. I wish more kids were physically in the building. But that, again, for a variety of reasons, kids are not coming into the building at all.
Elizabeth, you work with special education students who may require one-on-one help or individual attention. How are they doing, Elizabeth?
They're doing really well. We had a pretty successful remote learning experience in the spring, I'd say, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to keep half of the students that I had last year. So the students I had in sixth grade, I get to work with again in seventh grade. And the relationship that we've been able to build over the last year has been tremendously helpful. And we're all happy to be back in the building and face-to-face and be able to work through all of our everyday challenges together. But it is stressful, especially working with students one-on-one who may be particularly compromised, and just that level of anxiety of protecting my student is a big deal.
So Elizabeth, are all of your students with you in the building, or are some having to choose remote?
We have the Remote Learning Academy, so we're not doing synchronous learning. Families that decided to have their children learn from home are in a separate program with separate teachers. I do have a student that's on my caseload that's working remotely, and I do meet with that student weekly through Zoom, just like a scheduled time like I would with any of my students that were in the building. So that is a little bit tricky, but most of our students are in the building.
Okay, yeah, because we talked to Commissioner Edelblue on Tuesday, and he and the governor have really felt very strongly that special education students who need that in-person connection, that one-on-one support, need to get that in the building, and that he said there are ways to do that safely. I wonder, as a special education teacher, how you feel about that?
I think that's true, especially for students with higher needs. I mean, working remotely and trying to work with somebody through Zoom on, say, a communication device or something like that is very, very difficult. So I appreciate being able to have the time in person.
Lindsay, last but not least, what have you learned as a teacher over the fall about new ways maybe to impart the basics of biology to high school kids, and just to make sure your school in North Conway is all in person? Is that right, Elizabeth?
So we are mostly in school. I believe about 10% of our student body decided to spend the semester remote. However, we were able to schedule them into their own classes and sections, so teachers aren't teaching both at the same time. This semester, all four of my classes are face-to-face. However, we are doing things a little differently from that perspective in order to limit the transitions. So students come in, but they do one of their classes virtually in my room while I'm teaching one of my classes virtually to kids all across the building for 45 minutes. And then the kids that are in that room, we have an hour and a half class together for biology. Kids make one transition and we do the same thing again with two different classes. And then we rotate it every 2 weeks. And so far that has allowed us to really maintain having us here in the building for the most part. And it's been awesome. From a biology perspective, the fact that we're here is great because of the lab work.
Right.
Several years ago, I started teaching using flipped learning. So for me, I have a library of all of my content already videoed. And so when we moved to the remote in the spring, I was able to maintain that content push very nicely, just because I use those so frequently as for content. It was just the lab piece that I was really, you know, struggling to figure out how to do for my students. But being back here, they're so excited to be back in and just getting their hands dirty and working in the lab. We limited class sizes, so that piece has just allowed us to have a fair amount of flexibility, although the challenges are there for sure as students have to quarantine and how we address that. But overall, the students are happy to be here. And then there's been a lot of, you know, thinking outside the box to be able to make it work.
Well, and I wonder, Lindsay, you know, you said class sizes have to be smaller given the needs of social distancing. In a way, does that make it better working with the kids because you're maybe only working with 10 instead of 20?
Yeah, it's, we love it. yeah, that piece is great. It allows so much for us to get to know the students, you know, much better, build those relationships that, you know, just improve learning because, you know, just when you have that relationship with the student, the trust involved, for them to take risks to in their learning just skyrockets when, you know, they feel like they know you and vice versa. So that having the smaller classes for feedback, that is great. However, you know, the challenges are still there because even with the smaller class sizes, our switch of virtual and face-to-face has, you know, just increased our prep time, you know, to plan and make sure that we are addressing the needs of the kids who are, you know, still in the building, but having to learn for 2 weeks virtually versus, you know, in face-to-face. So it creates some strain and keeping engagement, but again, just being present is huge.
Well, I've got a bunch of emails from teachers that I want to share with all of you, and I'm so excited that people are writing in. Again, I encourage you to share your stories, especially if you're a teacher, as we talk with four New Hampshire educators in part two of our series, COVID and the Classroom. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So here's two I want to go to right now. Sue writes, "This is an incredible, exhausting, inspiring, triggering school year. We have seen colleagues step up and teach each other as we develop new procedures, yet we have seen anxiety spike, teachers ready to leave the profession, major communication issues. We have seen students step up, be patient, wear their masks, physically distance, yet we have also seen students feel defeated, gradually stop coming to classes, and have technical issues. Sue says we ride the roller coaster every day. We ask the community for grace as we are all learning this process together and for support for educators and staff while we are supporting your children." And then Dan writes, "Our Stratford school's attempts at remote learning have been terrible. There have been no instruction, email, or Google Classrooms of work that students and parents have to do completely on their own. The staff and administration have been unresponsive." I want to ask some of you about the community support, because I know this has been tough. There's a mix of emotions in communities about whether kids should be in school or be remote. And Maxine, too, first in Manchester, what's the sort of vibe that you're feeling from your community there?
I think overall, the community has been incredibly supportive. If everybody kind of recalls a pre-pandemic, you know, there's always been a lot of strife between community and teachers. Community, you know, if you ask them the question, what do you think about education? That may not be a positive response. But if you ask them about their child's teachers, it's always been a positive response. So I think overwhelmingly, the community has been supportive. I honestly wish people would stay off of Facebook with all the negative comments. I think our staff finds that very demoralizing at times. We've asked them not to respond. We've asked our staff to stay off of Facebook. It's not worth engaging in the negative commentary. But I think the parents we've spoken to, some of the businesses we've spoken up, has been extraordinarily positive.
Wow, Maxine. So telling staff to stay off Facebook because it's such a negative space. I'm really struck by that. Can you tell me a little bit more?
Sure. If you talk about stress levels, and if you keep putting yourself in a situation where you're just reacting and responding to negativity,
yeah,
then you don't really have any resiliency. You don't have anything in your tank to get you through the tough times. So in asking our folks, we can't demand it, we can't direct them, but in asking the folks from a union perspective, stay off of the negative commentary, don't engage in it. There are people reporting like that's been better. I mean, it's better not to hear it, just to do their job, listen to those folks, those families, those kids they're working with. It's demoralizing and it just increases stress. And I think that as a union and as a district, we're really trying to be functionally responsible to our staff, even though the staff sometimes doesn't feel that. There's a lot of work being done behind the scenes to support staff.
Wow. So Elizabeth, Dan, who wrote, talked about not just feeling not well supported by the administration, but also talked about technical challenges. Do you still have technical challenges at Richmond Middle School in Hanover in terms of, you know, being able to deliver the education that you want to deliver?
Well, we've been lucky to be in person 5 days a week since right. the first day of school. So we haven't had to face many of those remote learning challenges that other people have been facing. I know within the Remote Learning Academy, they've really worked hard to make sure that kids have the devices that they need and that they have the access to internet and all of the resources to help that program to be the most successful that it can be.
Lindsay, how about you? Technical issues in North Conway?
Getting better. We definitely didn't anticipate initially with our schedule what having every person in the building on a computer at one time would do to our internet. And during those virtual classes, that's the case. And so when we first started, it was just bogged down and we could not make happen what we wanted to. And it became an intense frustration. But our district has been working, you know, pretty hard with our internet providers, and they've been in and are working to address the challenges, and it's improved for sure, which is wonderful. But it initially at the start of the semester was a massive hurdle to get over with how we were going to be able to communicate with our students when, you know, it was just dropping constantly.
Sure, because everybody's on. Abe, I know you like to keep it positive, which I appreciate. I'm sure your students appreciate. Still, what's been most challenging for you, Abe, as an educator?
First, I want to go, can I talk about what she was just mentioning as far as the buildings being overloaded with
Absolutely.
Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
So my positive is last spring when we went to COVID fully remote, you know, I wasn't ready. I'd never taught a Zoom class before in my life. I'd never done any of that. And it was extremely difficult and stressful to get any engagement. One of the benefits Conval has is we are in person right now, but during the summer when they were making plans, we planned to go fully remote from Thanksgiving through Martin Luther King Day. So having this time to plan on going fully remote is a game changer. Whereas last spring, it was a huge punch to the gut, not being ready for it. So at least now I know that it's coming and I'm able to plan my lessons to be completely fully remote instead of being caught off guard.
Right.
Out of nowhere. The most challenging thing is getting students at home in a Zoom meeting to get engaged. Mm. I think that's true of educators. I don't want to speak for everybody, but there's different strategies and techniques, but in class, I can look at kids and see that they're participating. When they're on Zoom, most of them have their screens darked out. Most of them are muted. I have to call on them specifically to get them to engage. So if I have half my class at home engaging, I feel like a rock star, where, you know, if I go above that, man, I'm doing good. But usually I got one or two that I can actually get to engage, and the rest are just kind of along for the ride. And it's a daily battle.
That's interesting. And I keep reading about that. So Abe, you know, they've got their screens darked out. You can't though, right? For privacy purposes, you can't tell them you got to open that screen so I can see that you're at least there, right?
That's my understanding. I could nudge. I can say, yeah. Hey, you know, for instance, I have them show me their work on their cameras, on their Chromebooks. Gotcha. And stuff like that. But no, and I think that's could be a good thing. There are some kids that don't want to share their home life with the class. You know, they right. might not be in the best scenario. I completely get it. And I want to respect that for the students, but at the same time, it's a struggle when you switch from being a teacher that's about, you know, judging emotion and teaching to what the kids need to just professing information. And I'm not a great professor, I'm more of a teacher. So it's hard to gauge what they're getting and what they're not getting as I traditionally would in a classroom.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have to take a very quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to share a couple more emails that relate to what you said, Abe, that, you know, it's definitely hard for teachers, but they do at least feel better prepared. And I'll also ask the rest of you about what's been positive, if anything, out of all of this for you. Keep those emails coming. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. It's 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook or Twitter. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the second of a two-part special on COVID and the classroom. This hour, we're checking in with New Hampshire teachers. And listeners, let's hear from you, especially if you're a teacher, but also if you're a parent or a student or a former teacher. Tell us how the fall has gone for you and your family so far. And what do you want everyone else to know about what it's like to be a teacher this year? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 1-800-892-6477. We have four educators with us today, and all of you, I want to share a couple more emails. Rosemary writes, I'm doing a remote hybrid model with sixth graders. Making sure kids are participating is hard. Making a project they want to participate in is hard. Ensuring understanding is hard. Rosemary says, with rising numbers, although I'd love to have everyone in school, I am expecting to end up fully remote again at any time. But, she says, I'm more prepared than last year, and so are the kids. Cameron has a similar thought. He writes, I am a first-year teacher created in the metaphorical forge of COVID. Well put, Cameron. He says, I not only started teaching this fall, but I also finished my student teaching online during the national quarantine. Being a first-year teacher is already hard enough, but now the pandemic adds a whole new level of difficulty. I work at a public charter school in Manchester, and we are using a hybrid model of teaching. But I know that coming out on the end of this, I am going to be able to handle anything that is thrown at me. So I think to you first, maybe Elizabeth, in Hanover, both Rosemary and Cameron are saying, look, this is really hard, but I can do it, and I'm learning, and I'm hanging in there. And I just wonder how you feel, Elizabeth.
I would completely agree with that. I think that the start of the year, we were all very worried, very anxious, trying to figure out the logistics of how we were going to take care of our students. But once the students walked in the door and brought their excitement, enthusiasm for being here in the building, we all started to just kind of relax a little bit and tune into taking care of our students emotionally as well as academically, and thinking ahead to the future and how we could prepare our students if we do have to go remote in the future, and giving them the tools that they need to access what they will need to access remotely. So.
And you say prepare your students emotionally, and that's a really important point that a lot of people are focusing on, Elizabeth. How are you trying to prepare your students emotionally, given this, you know, sort of precious in-person time that you've had with them?
Well, that's one of the things that we thought a lot about in the spring and in the summer as we were trying to decide which model we should try to begin with, is that we just wanted the first 6 weeks in person so we could develop the relationships that we need to develop with our students if we had to go remotely. I think that was really key to our success in the spring, was the timing of that whole shutdown, and that we had already had all that time to build relationships with them. So they wanted to see us, we wanted to see them, we just kept up with that connection. And so we've really made it a priority in the fall to make sure that we are personally connecting with our students on a deeper level, to let them know right away that we are here for them no matter what comes our way.
Well, Lindsay, how about you? Any positives for you out of all this?
Quite a few. They, you know, just the joy of the kids being in the room, getting to see the students that I hadn't, you know, gotten a chance to say goodbye to last year. You know, that's been a big plus, is being able to, you know, walk by and, you know, you see your students that you had last year, and just to be able to like look them in the eye and say hi when you feel like, you know, we were robbed a little bit of that remainder of the year. But I have to fully agree with Elizabeth. The idea of what made that switch so much easier was that relationship building, you know, and knowing your students. We made a decision to do semester classes this year with most of our classes. And, you know, when the semester switches, if we go remote, there may be a whole new group of kids that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet yet. And I will say that's fairly, I'm not terrifying, but, you know, it's just, wait, I want to know them before we do that. But so, you know, the positive is, you know, kids are excited to be back at school, you know, who would have thought, right? And so, you know, it's been really, really cool to see them get excited about doing school again and doing science and, you know, seeing things happen instead of having to watch it happen.
Yeah, it's kind of what Abe said. When they are there, they're really happy to be there, which is great. Maxine, how about you? From your own perspective as a guidance counselor, and from your perspective as a leader in the Manchester Education Association, obviously this is incredibly tough for all of you, but any positives you can find, Maxine?
There are a tremendous amount of positives in addition to what's already been said, but I think for me, I am seeing innovation. People are having to go to an innovation model of doing things they've never done before. There's a lot more exploring about opportunities for kids, how to learn, where to go for learning. So I think the staff as a whole has been much more innovative. We're not locked into that curriculum box anymore of, you know, you need to do chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. They're really having to do a lot more with virtual learning. I think the other thing that we haven't mentioned that I really would like to note is a real shout out to our building administrators and school nurses and specialists, and cafeteria workers and transportation folks. I mean, teachers are a part of the puzzle, but those other people that make a complete team have made an extraordinary effort. So I think that in itself has allowed us to work closer, in Manchester at least, with our building administrators, and for the union to work with the district administration. I don't think that most people really understand how things are changing every day or multiple times a day. And sometimes the feeling is, we as a staff aren't getting clean communication. It's because things are moving very, very rapidly. So I think that's worth noting.
Yeah, it's a team effort for sure. And also, you're right, the virus changes so quickly and the conditions change so quickly. So this, you know, as that changes, it may seem like, gee, why didn't you tell me that? But the answer may be, Maxine, because I just found out 5 minutes ago. So
and Laura, if I can just quickly add,
go ahead.
We are such a huge district. We have 22 schools, 23 sites, including a preschool site. We've had about 80 new staff this year in our teaching group. So they're not getting that hands-on, face-to-face mentoring support in some cases. And some of them are just coming out of college and some of them have just come from other districts. So we face that, and we have new administrators too. So it's been a very, very wide and fast learning curve for all of us.
I wonder, Maxine, there is concern that remote learning or the hybrid model can be tough for kids who already come from difficult circumstances. And I know Manchester has a large percentage of kids who get free and reduced priced lunch. You have a number of students who for whom English is a second language, students living in poverty. How well have you been able to reach those students?
Gosh, love our social workers. We have reached a tremendous amount of students. We have food going out on a weekly basis. We have weekend food going out to folks. We've had a district team working on that since March. So I think we're reaching a lot of kids. We're just not necessarily engaging them. We know which kids need internet support. We know which kids need food and their families. But I will say to you, and I don't know if other people experience, I mean, I just got an email during the break from one of our staff that we have two students whose father is being deported. I mean, on top of all of this, now we're dealing with a family that's losing a parent. So the stress level for that family, how do you get them to be focused on education? It's just a very difficult situation.
Sure. And maybe if they're coming into the building every day and sitting in front of you, you have somewhat of a chance to connect. But if you're remote or partly remote, it's harder, Maxine. Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
I would absolutely agree with that statement. Yes.
I want to remind our listeners that we'd love to hear from you by email, exchange@nhpr.org, or by phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email from Nicole who says, I know you're focusing mostly on K through 12, but I thought I'd chime in from college teaching. My one word about the semester is ah. And I wish I could hear her say it because I'm not sure if it's a happy ah or, but I think it's a happy ah because she says, I love seeing my students when I can, in real life or virtually, but there are a lot of struggles. It's hard to learn or teach when your mental health is suffering from external circumstances. But Nicole says, we're hanging in there. Nicole, thank you so much. And this is something else that I wanted to ask all of you about. And maybe to you first, Lindsay in North Conway, but I'll go to everybody. What about your own sort of stress levels, mental health, and maybe those of some of your colleagues? It's a rapidly changing situation. It changes every day. There can be some negativity, you know, from the community. How's it going?
It comes and goes, to be honest. There are moments when, you know, we're riding, you know, pretty high, you know, coming off of, you know, our students, you know, creating such a fantastic Spirit Week in the, you know, with all of this, they really thought outside of the box. We had students create games that kids could do on their phones so classes could challenge each other. So they actually built and coded these games, knowing we couldn't have our traditional pep rallies and everything. So, you know, huge shout out to our students as far as being able to think outside the box. And that was a massive, you know, just upbeat push for, I think, everybody's, you know, general feeling. For teachers, it's hard. There are times when we may not necessarily feel listened to. We're doing what we can. We're pushing ourselves, you know, to the point of hours beyond what we ever, you know, thought we could. Even, you know, I'm 18 years in and, you know, working in some cases harder than I have in several years. And, you know, so that piece, remembering to take some time is difficult, especially, you know, when you have your family at home and making sure my daughter is getting what she needs. So it's, you know, it comes and it goes, but it's just a matter of working through, you know, and just
sure.
Remembering, yeah, and I'm sure that, you know, to take that time. You know, our admin, you know, has made it clear that they're trying to address that and allowing us to have the opportunity to voice concerns, to come speak, to take, you know, we put together different you know, mental health resources for the teaching staff, you know, and for all of our staff. So, you know, we're certainly making strides in that direction.
How about you, Abe? How would you say the sort of, emotional well-being is of you and your fellow teachers at Conval Regional High?
Resilient. I think that's true about students right now too. It's tough. I have a 3-year-old that I try to get to daycare every morning and pray every day that she doesn't have a cough or a runny nose or anything else that will throw my entire life into a tailspin at the last minute. I also have a high school. My stepson's is a junior here at Conval. So there's weeks he's fully remote at home while I'm in person. So to see him struggle is and then get home from work and need to help him work through things, because it is just tough to learn remotely. There's a lot of stress and it's everywhere. It's with our students, it's with our families, it's in our profession. And I applaud how resilient everybody is, especially students. I gotta give them a shout out. You know, it's easy to jump on the wagon of kids aren't as tough as they used to be, whatever that is. And I think this is worse than walking uphill both ways in the snow.
Which like, is what we always tell our kids, right? I had it tough when I was your age. Go ahead, Abe.
I think they win. I can just picture them telling their grandkids that they used to zoom in to all their lessons because and the internet wouldn't work and all these things that kids won't be able to imagine or picture in 50 years. So hats off to them.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, there is some mourning going on among kids, you know, for sort of that normal year and what it was like and being with friends. And, you know, we've heard some of that from our kids and their friends that, you know, this is my junior year. It's supposed to be fun, you know, and they're not getting that. So it's good to hear you say, Abe, that the kids are resilient. Here's an email from Rebecca, who says, my children attend the Ray School in Hanover, and the efforts of the administration and teachers are heroic. When one case hit the school, they were proactive in reaching out to families, which enabled quick action and reassurance. Rebecca says, my children feel safe and are thriving with in-person instruction, and I have faith, having been through the process once, that the school will act quickly and appropriately if and when more cases pop up. So thank you, Rebecca, for writing. And Elizabeth, that's your district in Hanover. How well would you say you feel supported by your administration that, you know, they're on it, and if something happens, they're going to just jump in and act the right way?
I feel we're very well supported by our administration, and I feel like the awareness of how we are all feeling has become increasingly more important as this time has gone on. When the cases popped up in our district, and we've now had 4 COVID cases within our schools, it's been very gratifying to see that the virus has not spread from one student to another. I think that was our biggest fear, was how was this going to go? And once we faced that and realized that the masking and cleaning and distancing and all of the things that we were working so hard to do actually works, we were able to take a deep breath and realize that, you know, we got this, we can figure this out. And if it pops up, well, we'll figure that out too. So it's just sort of rolling with the punches and figuring out how to manage it best.
Well, and Elizabeth, Abe mentioned, you know, he thinks the kids have been great. They've been resilient. They're wearing their masks. They're putting on hand sanitizer 20 times a day. What about at your school and the kids you work with, especially? Have they been following the protocols pretty easily? Has it been hard to, you know, convince them to put the mask over the nose and so forth?
Well, I actually have a homeroom as well, so I'm interacting with a lot of different kids, not just the kids that I work with in particular, and that was the thing that really surprised me the most with my homeroom kids in particular. They are just so excited to be here in the building, and they will do whatever it takes to to stay that way. And they will look out for us. They will do the cleaning. They are really, really aware of the importance of all of us being together. And they say, we don't ever want to go back to remote learning. We'll do whatever it takes. And, you know, I feel like the kids are really supporting the adults in the building at the same time. So it's really been wonderful to see.
Wow, that's encouraging. And after a break, just sort of picking up on what you said there, I do want to ask what the plans might be in your particular districts as winter approaches, as the holidays approach, as the numbers really get concerning here in New Hampshire. We'll talk about what the rest of the school year might look like for you and what your plans are. And we'll keep taking your emails. So send them in, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the massive undertaking by New Hampshire educators trying to teach kids in a pandemic. Listeners, let's hear from you, especially if you're a teacher. What's gone well this fall? What hasn't? And how are you feeling about the rest of the school year? Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call 1-800-892-6477. We have four educators with us today from around the state, Hanover, North Conway, Manchester, and Peterborough. And all of you, I want to share an email from Don and ask you what you're looking at for the rest of this fall and winter. Don writes, what are the triggers that determine remote versus in-class teaching? Are they following state guidelines? My understanding, Don says, is that the guide keeps changing and perhaps not keeping safety the priority. We are at an all-time high with COVID numbers that would have determined remote learning, but it seems some districts have decided to ignore this and stay in class. Don, thank you for writing. And Maxine, I'll turn to you first. Now that cases are really starting to rise in New Hampshire, how is Manchester reconsidering its approach, Maxine?
I think there's two factors. I think when you look at the numbers coming out of the state compared to the numbers coming out of school districts, they will look different. Because from our district level, we're disaggregating those numbers and taking out care facilities and really looking at our students and our teachers more heavily. On this coming Monday night, our school board is having a special meeting just to talk about how we're going to get through the holiday season. The numbers coming in from the staff, they've been surveyed, and that's top to bottom staff, not just teachers, about are you planning on traveling after Thanksgiving and for the winter break, would let us know that we're not going to have enough staff in the building with the quarantine requirements coming back in from out of state. We'll see what happens Monday night. I would say for all of us, no matter what district you're in New Hampshire, we will keep teaching in every way that we can. You know, our number one goal is to educate kids and to stay connected. And whatever our school districts determine, we will work with that.
So some schools, as you know, Maxine, are thinking about closing down Thanksgiving week. I shouldn't say closing down, going remote Thanksgiving week. And not coming back in person, possibly until after Martin Luther King Day in mid-January. So Maxine, I know you guys haven't decided yet, but is that one of the options that you're looking at?
Absolutely, and that's why the school board is meeting Monday night, because they will make a definitive decision. I would say that I would suspect we're gonna go the way of some other districts. Our high schools really haven't fully opened yet either. We have very few kids in the high school. They have not been brought back. Just the elementary and the middle in most cases. So the reality is, this isn't a matter of, you know, we're just gonna shut the schools because we're not getting enough staff in the building. It's a safety concern. And in shutting schools means going fully remote. We've done that before. I would agree with Abe and Lindsay and Elizabeth when they say we're doing it much better than we did in the spring.
Well, Elizabeth, to Don's point about just how these decisions are made, how does your district in Hanover, you know, check in, look at the data, reevaluate its current plan? And Elizabeth, I'm particularly interested in what you have to say because, again, your school, Richmond Middle School in Hanover, takes students from both New Hampshire and Vermont, and Vermont has much stricter standards than New Hampshire. So go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, that is a bit of a challenge, but all of our buildings in the middle school and high school anyway, we are in Hanover. So we're in New Hampshire. So we're following the New Hampshire guidelines. So our Vermont students are continuing to come to school. In terms of making decisions about what model to go to, we should go to or should be in, we're just using the data. We have a great group of physicians and other professionals in the area who are helping us and guiding us with these decisions. And I think paying attention to the numbers is really important. We can look around the state and look around the country and start to feel anxious about seeing the numbers increasing. But when you look in the numbers in Hanover, Lebanon, Plainfield, Lyme, and I'm looking at those numbers all the time, I'm reassured because our numbers are pretty low. So I think it really needs to be just a case-by-case, school-by-school decision. And we should be in person as long as we possibly can to keep everybody safe.
Well, and Lindsay, you talked about how much the kids love being in class and how much you love having them in class. What are your hopes, Lindsay, as the winter months approach?
Oh, I hope that we're here as long as we can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are, you know, we have our act together pretty well. I feel we did have one positive case here at the high school, and it was handled extremely quickly. Well, we didn't skip a beat. The student body was in the next day and very few kids stayed home. They were able to really reach out and connect with anyone considered a close contact very rapidly. And, you know, from there, we hadn't seen any spread from that point. As it moves forward, we're going to continue just kind of like what everybody else is doing, you know, look at the data, really use that to determine what we need. We had been considering the possibility that, as things were going really well, to actually increase our transition time to be able to actually see all classes face to face every day. And just as we started considering it was when we had the positive hit. So we pulled back on that and we'll continue to hold our current schedule, you know, till we see some changes, you know, either in the numbers or if the data support us being able to see our, you know, to have more changes and be able to, you know, cross those cohorts a little bit more readily. So, you know, I'm already starting to hear from students who may be leaving, you know, for the holidays and how that's going to impact, I think will just come down to the numbers we're seeing when it happens. So at this point, you know, fingers are crossed and we hope to continue. So, you know, until data dictates otherwise.
And Lindsay, I want to ask you something that Abe mentioned earlier. You know, he was concerned about, you know, if he had to quarantine, you know, if there's some exposure in his family, and that is something that everybody is dealing with, you know, even if you don't come down with the virus yourself, if you're exposed, you know, you're supposed to stay home for a time. What are your concerns, Lindsay, about staffing at your school? You know, just as people have to quarantine, either due to exposure or, you know, if they get sick.
Right. You know, as it stands, you know, we're already pretty running thin on subs. But just in that same sense, how many different people do you want coming in to support that? So at what point, you know, do our numbers of teachers being out really begin to affect, you know, that at this moment, it has not made a massive impact. So, you know, it's been very, very minimal, the number of teachers who have had to be out for 2 weeks. And so, you know, time will tell. But it is a concern because if all of a sudden we have all of our teachers having to be out, absolutely, we're going to have to make some big decisions and determine what's going to be ultimately best, not only for, you know, the teachers, but the students, you know, who are having, you know, to, you know, kind of deal with that all at the same time. So it's, you know, it's an absolute concern and something that's on the minds of our admin. Our nurses have been outstanding with how they are dealing with everything. You know, so just props to them for the work that they are doing.
Well, and I went on a bunch of school district websites this morning, including where all of you work, and I saw lots of call outs for substitute teachers and paraprofessionals. So it does seem to be There does seem to be a big shortage there. Let's go back to our listeners, and Amy is calling from the Lakes region. Hi, Amy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I am a school teacher, and I've been teaching in public schools now for 21 years. This is the worst year, without a doubt. I just want everyone to kind of like be aware of that, and then also realize that one of the problems, I think, is it goes so much with school boards, like whether or not schools are going to stay open. And I live in one town. My kids are hybrid, but I teach in a different town. And the town that I teach in cares so little about teachers and our well-being and whether or not it's safe to be at school.
Tell me more about that, Amy. Sort of how does that manifest itself in your opinion, that they don't care about you, as you said?
Well, I think it just comes down to like pushing us in terms of not only do we constantly, you know, we're going in and we're wearing masks, we're wiping down desks every class period, we're in charge of making sure we have all of our supplies. You know, we're having people look around and be like, are masks being worn in classrooms? We're having them be like, well, yeah, we're going to do all your observations in the fall because we want to make sure that in case we go remote, we can get our paperwork done. And then the other day we had an active shooter drill in our classroom. And to me, that was so, these drills are so traumatic, but yet they like had to do it. They felt like they had to do it, even though we were all supposed to be socially distanced, but we're building barricades in our classroom.
Wow.
And I couldn't, yeah. And then they, you know, they were going around checking the barricades and the kids are in masks and we're all trying not to like, you know, worry too much about anything. But then at the same time, we're in the middle of a global pandemic doing an active shooter drill.
Is this really the time to do that? Amy, just in the interest of time here on the show, because we're close to the end, I'm going to let you go. But Maxine, how well supported do you think Manchester teachers feel by their districts? Are there sort of day-to-day things like requiring teachers to be the mask police, requiring teachers to do all the cleaning? This active shooter drill does seem perhaps ill-timed given everything else that's going on. I wonder what you think, Maxine?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Let's talk about the active shooter drill. Even if we weren't in the situation, it's traumatic. The drills are critical that when we have folks in the building, if we have an emergency, that everybody, kids and staff know what to do.
Right.
So while it may add a level of trauma, it's a trauma that we have to work with through with our staff and our kids. I think that's critically important. Do educators feel they're being supported in Manchester? I think it depends on the educator you speak to. I think it depends on their level of anxiety and personal needs for themselves and their family. So I think it's extremely variable from person to person if they think that they are being supported and heard.
Thank you very much for calling in, Amy, and good luck to you. And a last question for all of you as we close out. I'd like to hear about some of your biggest takeaways that you've learned from the fall that you'll apply to the winter, no matter what kind of model your district might be in. And Elizabeth, I'm going to turn to you first, please.
The most important thing is to take really good care of yourself and those off in the after hours. We've just made a really big focus. The self-care piece is huge. So as soon as I walk out of the building, the mask comes off and I get home so I can go for a walk through the woods and really decompress and take that time to rest and relax and recharge and to get back into the building. And I think that's just really important. And also just to, I keep reminding myself that none of us are our best selves right now. And to just keep that in mind, that we're all in a different place, a different comfort level, and we need to take good care of each other.
Wow. Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that, Elizabeth. Most of us are not our best selves right now, for sure. That's Elizabeth Darlington, learning specialist at Richmond Middle School in Hanover. Elizabeth, thank you. It was great to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Lindsay Cole, same question for you. What are you going to take away from the fall and apply to the winter, you know, no matter what?
No matter what, to keep the connection with my students, no matter what, to, you know, stay interested in finding out about what they're doing outside of the classroom walls besides what's happening, you know, in the class itself, as important as it is, but, you know, to keep that connection, regardless of whether we're together or remote, to maintain, you know, again, just kind of like Elizabeth, you know, to maintain the self-care, to be able to turn some things off and focus on my family, you know, and make that happen as well, you know, when you're trying to ensure that, you know, we get through this and hope that, you know, just keep the hope that this is, you know, going to be a one-time thing and we can actually pull some of the good out of things, like certain things with our schedule.
Well, Lindsay, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Lindsay Cole, biology teacher at Kennett High School in North Conway. And Abe, you, I'm going to go real quick to you too. Your thoughts about what you're going to apply from this fall to the rest of the year.
Patience. You said it best at the beginning. We just need to be patient and patient with everybody. Give thanks to people that are working hard, whether it's our facilities guys, our school board members, everybody's working hard. And we need to recognize this is hard and be patient with each other.
Well, Abe, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Abe Ewing, woodworking and manufacturing teacher at Conbell Regional High. Maxine, I got to ask you to make it quick, but I'd love to hear from you too. Go ahead.
Well, I think my quick overview is we always take care of our kids. We need to take care of ourselves, but we also need to watch out for each other, not just the kids, but staff to staff, and just make sure that we get through this together as a team.
Maxine, it's good to talk to you too. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Maxine Mosley, guidance counselor at a middle school in Manchester. You've been listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.